The interfaith group iCare pushes to help this area's less fortunate and hold public officials' feet to the fire. Good morning and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Subscribe to our podcast. Just download the WJCT app. You can also stream this program live now on our Facebook page. Just ahead, Monday marked iCare's annual Nehemiah Assembly. We'll take a look at what was discussed and who did and didn't show up. 549-2937 to join us. Then later, the celebration of our local green economy marking Earth Month on the First Coast, and how April is marked as Sexual Assault Awareness Month here and across the nation. We'll tell you about an upcoming event to benefit the Women's Center of Jacksonville. All of that and more ahead this hour. But first, this morning on Monday, the Interfaith Coalition for Action, Reconciliation, and Empowerment, or iCare, held its annual Nehemiah Assembly. Faithful parishioners from across the city attend this high-powered event, and typically public officials are invited to show up as well. And they take direct pressure from the group about the need to pursue an array of social justice concerns. Now, more than 1,500 attended this year's event. On the agenda, homelessness, how to fund an ex-offender reentry center in the area, and the use of civil citations for minors who get in trouble with the law. Sheriff Mike Williams and State Attorney Melissa Nelson showed up for iCare's event, but Mayor Lenny Curry did not, a rare occurrence for a sitting mayor of Jacksonville. We're going to talk about that and much more as we welcome Pastor James Wiggins from St. Paul Lutheran Church. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nancy Ricker of Arlington Congregational Church.
Congregational.
Congregational Church. Sorry about that. And Pastor Philip Baber from Unitarian Universalist Church of Jacksonville.
Good morning, Melissa.
Those typos, you know, at the last minute, they can happen. our question to callers this morning. What do you think about the efforts of iCare to pressure our public officials, the mayor, the sheriff, the state attorney, and more, on a range of issues involving crime and punishment, homelessness, and more here on the First Coast? It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, email the show, firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Get us your thoughts that way. Tweets to @MelissaInJax or weigh in as we stream the show right now live on our Facebook page. Pastor Baber, let's begin with you. Let's begin with the positive. You had 1,600 people show up, and you got some pledges from public officials like the sheriff and the state attorney on some of your most pressing concerns. How did it all go?
Thank you for bringing that up, Melissa. It was an exciting night that energized our base of people immensely, and some of the things you just mentioned are absolutely true. We heard some amazing testimony about the transformative power of restorative justice in all DCPS schools, which was amazing to hear about that. We got to hear about both our state attorney and our sheriff being willing to support the idea of an expansion of neighborhood accountability boards to go from 4 to 3, which will bring restorative justice to even more young people to get civil citations and work through that system as opposed to being arrested. We heard about our continuing efforts to bring a grocery store to a food-stricken area up on the northwest side of Jacksonville, and that we are well on our way there. We heard several different victories that are definitely worthy of celebration.
That's the good news. Pastor James Wiggins, St. Paul Lutheran Church, you also urged Mayor Lenny Curry to attend, in particular, to address the needs of the homeless in downtown Jacksonville especially. Curry didn't show up. Your thoughts?
Melissa, we were disappointed that our mayor was not with us, but at the same time, we were delighted to see the citizens show up in great numbers to say we are all standing together, because we recognize that it is critical. It's a crisis in our city, and we do need to address the needs of the homeless to make sure that the services and resources that they are able to have access to.
Nancy Ricker, you're with Arlington Congregational Church. What's your reaction to the city's response on this matter? The Homeless Day Resource Center was initially envisioned as a place for homeless in downtown, particularly to access services to help them get housing and jobs. Funding for that has dropped off. There have been allegations that it really wasn't an effective center, and that's why there's been a loss in funding. Where does iCare stand on reopening this, and what's the case for reopening it? How are you going to convince the city to do so?
Well, we think that there was a pilot, and clearly I think there were some issues that needed to be addressed, but we were working with Clara White Mission to come up with a process for doing this that would make it much better. There is data that says the prior one was successful. There were issues, but it did provide a place to give dignity to the most needed in our community. And we just think it's a vital part of dealing with the whole broad spectrum of the homeless.
Pastor Baber, when Mayor Curry attended your assembly last year, he said he couldn't even look at these issues until he pushed through reform of the city's pension code and how we structure pension debt. Now that that has been successfully resolved for the most part, what are your thoughts about the mayor's response to your concerns this year? And also, I want to ask you, you were one of the faith leaders in the meeting room with the mayor when you said he became adversarial and threatened to cut off all of your concerns if you went to the media. You did. You ended up going to the media and addressing these issues publicly. So where are things right now?
That is correct, Melissa. So just to address that issue very quickly, both Pastor Wiggins and I were involved in that closed-door meeting with the mayor in which he told us that if we went to the press with our concerns on the suffering of the homeless, that he would walk away and not assist us on that issue. And that absolutely happened. And unfortunately, the mayor's lack of an appearance at the assembly might be a demonstration of him following through on that. As to your first question related to the pension issue, what we heard at the assembly, we played back the clip that clearly demonstrated that the mayor said that if the pension plan were to pass in August, that he would embrace our desire to move forward with a homeless day center. And in that regard, then we are, of course, very disappointed that the pension, in fact, did pass. And here we are almost a year later looking at this issue. And the mayor has seemed to walk back his initial earnestness in terms of being able to move forward on this. And we certainly do believe that there is a desperate need for people to have access to daytime services and shelter. You know, we were blessed to have a mild winter in Jacksonville this year, but summer is coming. And I think that the plight and the suffering of the homeless, especially in downtown, the moral responsibility of what happens to those people this summer falls squarely on the shoulders of the mayor.
James Wiggins.
Yes, we too believe that the mayor, and actually the mayor has gone on record to say that he is in support of a day resource center. And the collaborations with the Clara White Missions and the numbers that came out of the mayor's office indicated that if the city would fund $311,000, that would allow the Day Resource Center to be open and operational for 5 days a week.
About $300,000 line item for the year.
Yes.
And so it sounds as though you're just not going to accept the city's position on this, that it's not feasible financially?
We simply do not believe that to be the case. We have a budget of over $1 billion for the city. It is not a lack of funds. It is a lack of political will and political courage and political leadership.
Let me ask you, Nancy Ricker, as a quick follow-up before we go to all the callers. Here is an email from a listener, and he writes, "You recently hosted Dawn Gilman, director of the local homeless coalition, and she talked about how the former day center did not actually reduce homelessness and did not impact crime, which were two key goals. Shouldn't iCare be taking advice from the homeless coalition?"
I'm going to pass that to Philip. That's
yes.
Not my issue.
Okay.
Sure, absolutely. You know, we, of course, are incredibly supportive of the work of all of the homeless providers here in the city, and they are the boots on the ground that know what's going on. So we are fully supportive of their efforts to be able to end homelessness. But I think that what is really important to consider in all of this is that as all of us are coming together to look at a comprehensive solution to this problem, we have to understand that a comprehensive solution must also include providing relief during daytime hours to our residents. And I think that if the mayor wants to see a comprehensive solution and a comprehensive plan, he must guarantee comprehensive funding to be able to provide for those needs.
And Nancy Ricker, as iCare presses on the issue of the city's budget as a moral document, you're framing this as a moral imperative for city leadership.
That's
correct. They do not seem to see the framing the way you do, though, at least not yet.
But we will not give up. If there's anything iCare is, it's we have tremendous perseverance.
All right, let's go to your calls for the leadership of iCare. What do you think about the way they press public officials on everything from helping the homeless to increasing the use of civil citations for minors so that they don't fall into the so-called school-to-prison pipeline? A new, actually beefing up the funding for the reentry center for people leaving incarceration and trying to reenter society, all sorts of issues like that. We want your calls right now, 549-2937. Robert is in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Robert. Good morning.
Good morning. I represent First Coast Maritime Academy. We provide vocational training to disadvantaged youth at risk and to youthful offenders. We train people to become merchant seamen. We've had several of our graduates get hired by Crowley Corporation at a starting salary of about $45,000 a year. If we could get the city to do more of the citations and less of the putting people in jail for minor crimes, we could actually help more people. I'd like to see more pressure put on the city to accomplish that goal.
All right, thanks, Robert. Okay, and that's certainly the whole point of iCare. You're applying pressure on these pain points, and these really, I must say, divisive social justice concerns. And Nancy Ricker.
I would like to say that we did get a commitment from the sheriff on Monday night that he would increase by March 27th of 2018 to 90% of the eligible youth getting civil citations. He stated that 83% were right now. Well, that's a little disingenuous because that's using Duval County criteria, not state criteria. But he did make a commitment to us that he would get to 90% using the current state law by March of next year.
And the whole point of that, Pastor Baber and Pastor Wiggins, is to help young people who are at risk of falling into the criminal justice system. Once they're in it, a downward spiral begins. The whole idea is to avoid that, if possible, right?
Absolutely.
Pastor Wiggins.
I agree wholeheartedly. Statistics have shown that when we're able to intervene in a comprehensive and a real strategic strategy, that those who offend are able to come out and have a very productive lifestyle.
And that is part of the reason also why we are backing a state bill in Tallahassee to be able to make it mandatory to be able to have certain nonviolent misdemeanors go directly to a civil citation as opposed to an officer arrest, which Nancy can certainly speak more to if there's an interest there.
Yes, we are working to get Senate Bill 196 passed, which makes 12 nonviolent misdemeanors mandatory. It's not fair for a youth in Duval County to go to St. John's County and get an arrest when you would get a civil citation here. We want to make it fair across the state. It doesn't take away, you know, one of the pushbacks the sheriff gave for his lack of support of the bill is that it takes away officer discretion. Really doesn't. It limits it. They have discretion on everything except those 12, and they even have discretion on those if they want to take him to the Jacksonville Assessment Center rather than doing an arrest. There are a lot of opportunities there. And it's a 90% success rate. If we can get a young person to come to a neighborhood accountability board, they will not reoffend because of the tools and the counseling and the help they get to be able to put their life on the right kind of path. So we really want to encourage people to call the Speaker of the House, Representative Cochran, at 850-717-5000. To give your support to this bill so that across the state of Florida, our youth will not be arrested. Blacks are twice as likely to be arrested as whites under the existing process.
And lots of, Pastor Wiggins, go ahead quickly, and then we'll go back to the phones.
I was going to say, one of the exciting things about Senate Bill 196 is that it makes 12 nonviolent misdemeanors mandatory for the issuance of civil citations statewide, and that is exciting.
All right, a couple of emails and tweets. Here's one from John. iCare may be surprised to learn there is a day center where homeless get relief at Quest in downtown Jacksonville, as well as Claire White Mission and other places where homeless can sit, rest, use a phone, watch TV, get cold drinks, use bathrooms, and more. And a tweet from Scott. Crying and throwing the mayor under the bus on live radio isn't a good way to garner his support. What about that?
Well, you know, we are a direct action organization, and part of our mission is to make sure that we hold our public officials accountable. There is nothing personal in our comments or in our observations. We simply want to make sure that our publicly elected officials are remaining answerable to the people and listening to their real concerns.
Let's go to Tom on the West Side. Hi, Tom. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Ah, good morning to you, too. And yes, I just want to say I was very disappointed as well that the mayor did not show up. It's a little bit of a question about the mayor when he cannot face a room full of clergy and congregants and hear their opinion. It raises questions about what kind of representation we're getting. But on the positive side, as has been mentioned, the progress of the sheriff was very encouraging, and VD's representative, and like I say, VD, he wasn't there, but at least he sent representatives. They also provided a very encouraging report of a good deal of progress being made from last year's meeting.
Thanks, Tom. Yes, you have the superintendent of schools, Nicolai Vidi, well, representative for him. He may soon be decamping for a job in Detroit, Michigan. You had the DCPFs on hand and state attorney Melissa Nelson. She, of course, ousting former state attorney Angela Corey. She started to take the prosecutor's office in a different direction, particularly with regard to some of these issues that you're pressing on. So how do you see your relationship with her office unfolding?
Well, of course, it is very early in the process, but I think it's fair to say that we are so far heartened by the beginning of this new relationship with the new state's attorney. We are also heartened by some of the things that Sheriff Williams has said as well. With that said, I also want to note that we didn't get exactly everything we wanted from them in the assembly last night. But again, we are looking forward to a healthy working relationship with both of those individuals and a continuing healthy relationship with DCPS.
Nancy.
And if I could add to that, we did get the state attorney to agree to allow youth that are not eligible for civil citations to be diverted to neighborhood accountability boards. And she and the sheriff both agreed to work with teen court in order to get additional funding so that we can help in at least three additional NABs making, I'm sorry, neighborhood accountability boards, making a total of seven so every youth in the county can be covered. So we would add one in Mandarin and Ocean Way and another one on the west side.
All right. And if you're just tuning in, it's been fascinating over the years to watch the growth of iCare. That's the local interfaith coalition of congregations across the city. They have different faiths, but they share a common goal: pressing public officials on issues of great social concern here on the First Coast. What are your thoughts about the way iCare is pushing this agenda in the corridors of power here in Jacksonville? 549-2937. Matt in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Matt. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. This is Matt Killen again. I'm calling from downtown. And the main thing that I wanted to point out is that we might want to talk to the mayor more on an economic standpoint. I've seen people go around downtown trying to sell an idea or sell another business on coming downtown, and they'll have like a row of people. It's very strategic to block off the visitors from actually seeing the homeless people and try to court them around town so that they don't have to see the blight. Well, rather than, you know, just doing that, we could actually fix these problems with actual funded, well-funded day centers in places like Changing Homelessness, which assess taking care of the housing first, you know, and going about that model. Because I have heard, you know, with the day center, there was some critiques that it didn't do enough. Well, then fine, do more. Let them do more. Get better funding into this and make it something accessible for everyone.
Sure. Thanks, Matt. And yes, Don Gilman from the Homeless Coalition has spoken out saying that the day center helped connect people to services, Pastor Wiggins, but it didn't accomplish the goal of rapid rehousing, which increasingly that's the consensus that advocates around homelessness say we've got to focus on, getting people rehoused. So what about Matt, the caller's point of view?
Well, I think Matt is correct because it has to be a comprehensive approach, because we realize that people who become homelessness is not just a one dilemma that they're facing, but there are numerous things that they're up against. But we do realize that when the resource center was open, it served 150 people a day. And those were people, mm-hmm. people who came with specific needs. And we know that the resource center was part of a stopgap, if you will, to help them as they were seeking to move along and to progress in their life.
And if I could jump in on that real fast, I just also like to note that the new plan for the day center was put together by Clara White Mission and the mayor's office. They both worked together on this, and it is a new and improved design that learned from some of the issues that were with the first one. And I think that it absolutely could serve as a low barrier gateway to be able to put people into better housing down the road. In fact, there is a model out of New Orleans in which a drop-in center had an 81% success rate of getting its individuals into permanent housing.
Marianne is in Mandarin. Hey, Marianne, thanks for holding. Good morning.
It's Marianne. I just wanted to chime in. I was at the Nehemiah Assembly, and I just wanted to chime in. I think the idea of looking at something like the Shell Suite Center, where they engaged multiple services beyond just the job services, but perhaps created a more communal type of an arrangement where it's not just homeless, we're helping uplift the community. And I know the homeless, it's extremely important to have something that they feel comfortable going to. But if they felt they were part of the community, and we created this more as a community center that would be long-lasting and to, you know, enhance the alternative steps or an alternative place to stepping into the community to find housing, I think it's the messaging and the way we're looking at the center to begin with. Look at it as a broader place to offer communal services, not only to the homeless, but within the community. And we may indeed find greater support because it would be a long-lasting communal center. Just a thought.
Thanks, Marianne. All right, Lucy in the Town Center neighborhood. Hey, Lucy, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you. I just wanted to just plant a seed, but maybe as you're working on this project, money, you could think about maybe leasing the fairgrounds, the community center where they have the agricultural stuff, the plants. That's air conditioned. There's bathrooms. And maybe it could be leased for months that it's not used for the fair, but just leased. It's you know, there's bathrooms, water, air conditioning. It would be a good catch-all place. That's all.
Yeah, thanks, Lucy. And lots of feedback, lots of suggestions from listeners. Here's another email for all of you from the Reverend Kenneth Myers. Why do the good goals for direct action by ICARE have to be framed in a religious framework? Why not talk more broadly on an ethical concern for the common good? Pastor Wiggins.
Well, we do believe that the issues we are tackling, they are moral. They're human issues. It is our desire to be in alliance, not only with religious organizations or institutions, but we seek to partner with others. You know, through our board of directors, we've had conversations about how we can intentionally and specifically work with others to help impact and to bring change and transformation.
And as you continue to do that, Pastor Baber, here's a comment on our Facebook page from Ray. Has the mayor's office given a statement as to why he didn't attend? How will you work with the mayor's office over the next year?
We have not received anything directly from the mayor's office, to my knowledge, and in any terms in terms of any official statement as to why he did not show up. But you know, it is our hope, of course, that we can have a healthy working relationship with the mayor and moving forward. That is what we're looking for here. We're not looking for intransigence. We're looking for a solution.
Thanks for being with us, and we will continue to follow this issue as Eye Care Leadership joins us. Nancy Ricker from Arlington Congregational Church, Pastor Philip Baber, Unitarian Universalist Church of Jacksonville, Pastor James Wiggins of St. Paul Lutheran Church. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us, Melissa.
Much more still ahead later. Marking Sexual Assault Awareness Month on the First Coast with a powerful reading of a letter that went viral around the world. But up next, it's a local celebration of the growing green economy on the First Coast, how you can be part of it. That's in our Going Green right after this.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Goodwill of North Florida. Donate, shop, jobs. Good things for North Florida with Goodwill. Proud supporters of WJCT's First Coast Connect. GoodwillJax.org for more info.
On the next 1A, the rules that protect your web browsing history could soon vanish. Once that happens, your internet service provider will no longer need your permission to sell information about what websites you visit, the apps you use, or where you use them. Do you have questions about that? We do. We'll hear more next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
There's been a great deal of political discussion lately on federal funding for public broadcasting. No matter how you weigh in on the issue, it really comes down to this. The most dependable and predictable source of funding right now for WJCT is from listeners like you. And in these uncertain times, it's especially important that every listener contribute. Your investment right now is the best way to ensure the future of this public radio station. Call 353-9528.
It's time. The WJCT T-shirt competition finalists have been chosen. And now it's up to you, the First Coast community, to pick the design from here. To vote, go to wjct.org/45years. Simply click on your favorite entry and then click the green thumbs up button. It's that simple. Voting continues through March 31st at midnight. For more information, go to wjct.org/45years.
Welcome back. Well, Earth Day is coming up in a few weeks, and in Jacksonville and around the nation, April is now Earth Month. Here on the First Coast, a celebration of our growing green economy is on the calendar. It's today's Going Green on the show as we look ahead to the Green Line Festival. Here in studio, Marian Beiler. She's the Live Smart Coordinator with the local chapter of the U.S. Green Building Council. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us here.
Also with us, Jake Gordon, CEO of Downtown Vision, Inc. Hey, Jake.
Hey, Melissa. Thanks for having us.
And you guys brought some light bulbs with you. We're going to talk about those in a minute. But first, Marian, let's talk about the Green Line Festival. This is conceived as a way to promote and create awareness of sustainable organizations and their impact on the economy. This is a cool idea, and it's grown over the years. What's on tap this year?
It's been held in San Marco in previous years, and this year we're partnering with Downtown Vision to have it at Art Walk. So it will be this upcoming Wednesday, April 5th from 5 to 9, and it's free to attend. And it's put on by the U.S. Green Building Council of Florida, which is who I work for. So there's going to be local businesses that all citizens in the Northeast Florida region can learn about.
And you're going to be showing off the Live Smart trailer. That's Florida's sustainable materials and resources trailer. Basically, people can go in the trailer and learn about cool green updates to their homes, right?
That's exactly right. It's a trailer fitted out much like a tiny home, and you can walk through it with interactive displays and signage and talk to hosts that can talk to you about wherever you're at with green building.
So, Jake, Art Walk is always fun and lots of stuff going on, but this theme is Do Your Part in partnership with the Green Line Festival and to celebrate Earth Month. So this month you have more of a sustainable theme.
Yeah, well, we've been working, with U.S. Green Building Council for a little while. We love to use Art Walk to help, you know, the nonprofits and these great causes. And so it was a great partnership between us. You know, we use Art Walk to promote downtown, and it's going to be great to have a lot of people coming downtown and learning about how they can save energy and save money in their homes.
One way to do that is you're really wanting to stress what you call the Do Your Part Challenge. And I'm going to be part of this challenge because you guys brought some light bulbs to the studio.
We did.
What's the challenge?
The challenge is called Install One, Get One LED Light Bulb Challenge, and you can go to the USGBC North Florida Facebook page and learn a little bit more about it. But the basic thing is you take a picture or a short video of yourself installing an LED light, tag two friends and inspire them to do the same, and then you share your picture on that page, the USGBC North Florida Facebook page, as proof of entry. And when you come to the Green Lion Festival, you can get a free LED light.
Get a free light. You can post the video of you doing this. This helps save kilowatt hours, reduce carbon emissions, and you can calculate your impact. Isn't there a website that lets you do that?
You can do that, and we will do that and post it on our Facebook page at the end of the Green Lion Festival. We'll quantify the amount of light bulbs used and the kilowatt hour saved and the carbon dioxide emissions prevented and the dollars saved.
Very nice. So people can take the challenge, Jake. They can also check out some electric cars. It sounds like you're going to have a whole array of things.
Yeah, well, we're going to have all the great things that happen at Art Walk usually, but we're going to have two great blocks of Green Building Council things. And so you're going to be able to have a lot of fun and learn a lot. We're excited for the LED challenge. I think we were talking earlier about how it doesn't feel like one person can have that big of a difference. But the reality is, with all of these light bulbs that are going to be changed, aggregating them all together is going to save a huge amount of energy, which is exciting.
Yeah, every little bit helps. And so later today, I'll post a video of myself doing the challenge.
That'll be great.
Look for that here, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And come on out to Art Walk the first Wednesday of every month and be part of the Green Lion Festival. Guys, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Marianne Myler is the Live Smart Coordinator for the Green Building Council. Jake Gordon, CEO of Downtown Vision, Inc. Again, it's the Green Lion Festival coming up at the First Wednesday Art Walk. And we'll be right back.
This Going Green segment is brought to you by the Unitarian Universalist Church of Jacksonville.
Great question. That is a great question.
And that's a great question.
Wow, that's another great question.
That's a great question.
Oh, that's a great that's a great question.
That is a great question.
What a great question.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear unexpected questions and unexpected answers. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, the website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part 2, sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. The best in classic and modern blues as part of WJCT's After Hours. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
I don't want no woman telling me what to do.
Welcome back. Brock Turner, the college student who sexually assaulted a young woman on the Stanford University campus, was sentenced to prison for the crime, but he was released in September of last year after serving just 3 months. After the assault, the woman wrote a letter to him about her experience. An extremely powerful impact statement that's been shared by millions. Now that letter is being read on a local stage to mark Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which kicks off in April. This is a project to benefit the Women's Center of Jacksonville, Nassau Rape Crisis Division, and the reading is called You Don't Know Me. Right now we welcome Diana Herman, who put the letter in script form, Sarah Weiss, Advocacy Director, and Lori Armstrong, the Nassau County Advocate for the Rape Crisis Division. Ladies, all of you, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you so much, Melissa.
Diana, let's begin with you. This letter was shared publicly as the woman who was assaulted told the world and told Brock Turner, more importantly, what his acts did to her psychologically, physically. It's an incredibly powerful statement, and it's very difficult to read. Can you share a little bit about why you decided to put this in the form almost of a play or a public reading?
Well, theater is my art, and after reading the letter, I felt compelled to stage it. I had to do something with her words. They are so powerful. Her imagery as well. She shares the before, the during, the after trial, the sentencing. But we hear her pain, her anger, her frustration, but it's her strength that, and how she transcended her ordeal, taking back the power after being helpless for so long, that stayed with me. I just couldn't let it be, so I felt I needed to do something with it.
What's going to be happening, Sarah? This is going to be performed in Nassau County, and a really cathartic experience, I would think, for women that have also gone through assault, and they can be part of this as well.
Yes. The play is going to, it's a fundraiser for us at the Women's Center. And what that does is help us raise funds for survivors for any of their immediate needs. Some of the needs that we need funding for is clothing, food, sometimes emergency shelter such as hotels. Mm-hmm. That's not too common, but it does happen at some point. We need funding for transportation, and it really helps us directly help those survivors and their needs.
And Lori Armstrong, you want to help survivors. You need funding, but you also need to raise awareness, because I think what this case did was it brought home the issue of hookup culture and rape culture on college campuses and in society generally. For example, the judge in this case, Santa Clara County Judge Aaron Persky, initially he said he didn't want to go too heavily on Brock Turner because it might impact his athletic career. That's rape culture.
Exactly.
And in the impact statement, the woman writes what it was like to read about this in newspapers all around the world. And she writes, in the next paragraph, I read something that I will never forgive. I read that according to him, I liked it. Again, I do not have words for these feelings. At the bottom of the article, after I learned about the graphic details of my own sexual assault, the article listed his swimming career 6 times. And so Brock Turner's swimming career in her eyes, and of course in the eyes of society at the time, was presented as more important than the fact that a crime had been committed.
Exactly. And it's so unfortunate when it comes down, especially with athletes. There was, if you've ever seen The Hunting Ground, which is about college assault on college campuses, athletes tend to get away with a little bit more. And especially
sometimes a lot more.
Sometimes a lot more. The backlash that particular judge got in the Brock Turner case, there was outrage. But this letter does speak for a lot of survivors and will hopefully help other survivors be empowered.
Right. And they're trying to, Diana Herman, they're trying to recall this judge. They were going to hold a special election, but they've delayed placing a recall on the ballot until next summer. So Brock Turner served 3 months.
Yes.
That's more, actually, than a lot of men convicted of sexual assault serve. Often they don't serve any time at all.
No. And just think about how many cases are unreported. I believe the statistic on college campuses is 1 in 5 women experience sexual assault or rape. And there are so many more that are unreported.
And this one might not have ever been reported, except for the fact that a couple of young
Swedish graduate students
were bicycling by and happened to witness this.
Yes. Now, she was behind a dumpster and not in the view of anyone. And the two grad students were very overcome with emotion when they did tackle him as he was fleeing the scene.
And she was unconscious.
Right, she doesn't remember the assault.
No, has no memory.
Okay, so the reading is called You Don't Know Me. Again, yes. If you're just tuning in, as April marks Sexual Assault Awareness Month, this project will benefit the Women's Center of Jacksonville, Nassau Rape Crisis Division. You know, we need to mention, Sarah, that the Women's Center doesn't just serve women in Duval County, but also Nassau and I think Baker County.
Right.
So this will help women all over the area.
Yes. And our rape recovery team happens to serve all genders, not just women. So all survivors of sexual violence can access our services through our rape crisis hotline.
Okay. And what's that number?
It's 904-721-7273, and it's a 24-hour rape crisis hotline.
And how can people attend this event? Let's give that information out once again.
It will be at the Amelia Community Theater, March 31st and April 1st, both 8 p.m. It's an hour-long performance. We will also have a talk back after the performance.
And how many actors, how many people on stage?
There are five actors, three women share the letters. So we have three different voices to show the universality of the subject matter.
Excellent. Thanks so much for joining us, Diane Herman, who scripted this, Lori Armstrong and Sarah Weiss, advocates with the Nassau Rape Crisis Division of the Women's Center of Jacks. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And we'll be right back.
I'm Jessica Palumbo. When WJCT first began broadcasting in 1972, a gallon of gas cost just 55 cents. Just as the price of gas has gone up over time, so have the costs of programming this station. But one thing hasn't changed. Listeners who give every year are still the most reliable source of support for this station. Become a sustainer by calling 904-353-9528 or go to wjct.org.
Sit back, relax, and travel back in time with 89.9 on Sunday nights beginning at 7 with Radio Theater.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe.
Doo-wop Revival.
Good evening, I'm Glenn Fisher, the king of the doo-woppers.
Relax Radio. Throwback Sunday, Sunday nights beginning at 7 on 89.9 WJCT. Online at WJCT.org. Looking forward to looking back.
From electronica to blues, listen to After Hours Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. only on 89.9 FM. Your community, your world, your music.
I woke up in an ambulance wearing a cheerleading outfit, which, if you're over 30 and it's not Halloween, just raises questions.
Join us next time for more True Stories Told Live. This week, a sword fight, amnesia, the rise of a hip-hop star, and the fall of the Berlin Wall. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele. We have a good show coming up for you this weekend on A Prairie Home Companion, if I do say so myself, with music from The Shins and Miss Regina Spektor. Plus, the Royal Academy of Radio Actors will be there. That's Tim Russell, Serena Brooke, and Mr. Fred Newman. Our first call radio players. There'll be a new song of the week and much, much more. Hope you'll join us.
Saturday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, the co-founder of Vera Bradley is the headliner as the University of Florida hosts its 2017 Women's Entrepreneurship Symposium coming up tomorrow over in Gainesville. We've got a preview right now on the line. We welcome Nola Miyasaki. She's Executive Director of Outreach and Incubation over at UNF's Entrepreneurship and Innovation Center. Nola, good to talk to you.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Doing great, thanks. So this is a symposium looking at issues involving women in entrepreneurship, and what an entrepreneur you've snagged to speak, the co-founder of Vera Bradley. Tell us about it.
Well, we are so excited. Well, Vera Bradley, as you probably know, was started some 35 years ago, and it was started in a garage by Barbara Bradley Bakegard and her best friend, Pat Miller. And 35 years later, they're a publicly traded company. They're in thousands of stores. They have their own retail stores. And so she's really going to come to talk about her story from really just an idea. And they've revolutionized the handbag and accessory industry.
Oh, absolutely.
And so we're just excited. She's coming all the way from Indiana to talk to the people, the women in Florida, and try to inspire them and tell them about her story.
Now, women attending will get a Vera Bradley gift, so that's certainly a nice incentive.
Yeah.
But they'll also get some important information. Any woman thinking of starting her own company, what else is on the agenda besides the keynote?
Well, we have five exciting entrepreneurs. And in fact, the opening keynoter, Naomi Whittle from Reservage, just spent the last 24 hours on QVC with her products, and she sources nutritional supplements from all over the globe, and she's become a huge force in nutritional food products. So we're excited to have her open the session. And then we have a wonderful marketing brand company called Brand ID, Jennifer Smith, and she is going to tell entrepreneurs how she grew her company into a national company using branding and marketing, and how entrepreneurs can use that as a tool to grow their businesses as well. So, and in between, there's a panel of women. So there's some really exciting speakers, both local and national, and certainly a lot of great stories about challenges, failures, as well as huge success.
And this is certainly in keeping with your mission, the UF Entrepreneurship and Innovation Center. Tell us a little bit more about that center on the Gainesville campus and what your goals are.
Well, we're part of the Warrington College of Business. We're a nationally recognized entrepreneurship center that offers curriculum. We offer a master's in entrepreneurship degree for graduate students. We offer undergraduate degrees and certificates, and we teach more than 2,000 students every year across the UF campus. But in addition, we also help students start ventures. So that's why we're seeing this huge groundswell of interest across the campus and also in Gainesville. We're going to have close to 500 people tomorrow at the event. We're still taking walk-ins. We'll take walk-ins tomorrow, but we're pretty much almost sold out. But across the university campus, we have a student incubator that's got more than 15 companies, and I was counting up yesterday. I've probably had more than 100 students in that incubator over the last 2.5 years. And we've had some really exciting success stories coming out of our program in terms of student and young alumni startups.
Excellent. And as you mentioned, it's nearly sold out, but people do like to walk up sometimes. So how can people register here at the last minute?
Well, if they can get all the information if they go to warrington.ufl.edu/WES. So WARRINGTON, warrington.ufl.edu/WES. And they can also call us 352-273-0330. But right now our registrations will close tonight at midnight or at 5 o'clock this evening, I guess. And we'll take in walk-ins from that time on.
Excellent. Thanks for getting on the line with us. Have a great time tomorrow. Nola Miyasaki.
So much.
Thank you. Executive Director of Outreach and Incubation at UF, their Entrepreneurship and Innovation Center. That 2017 Women's Entrepreneurship Symposium is tomorrow. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. This show's producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app to listen anytime. And next on 1A, why the rules that protect your web browsing history could soon vanish. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.